All right, welcome to RSG The Cipher. We're here. We got a special show. The Cipher is our show where we kind of put an issue in the middle of the ring, and we just let the mic go and we kind of dig deep on that topic. And tonight okay. We're going to talk about boxing. That's what we're going to get into. We're going to have a lot of fun with someone who's very familiar with being here at RSG and being part of the RSG family experience. And so we're going to have a great time. All of the callers are brought to you by Patreon. Patreon is where you can go support your favorite underground artist or performer. You can go to Patreon and support RSG on that. You can check it out. Just check out the information associated with this podcast. In the details, we'll give you a link to Patreon where you can support RSG and other artists who are trying to make something happen here in the space of performance and media. Tonight, we got a special guest. I got my guy Darnell with me, but we got the man, Dougie Fisher, editor of Ring Magazine, our friend of the program, we believe, someone who I wish I could have had a chance to connect with when I was out in L.A. recently.
Sorry about that.
But that's all right. We'll make it happen. I'm coming back, yeah. And I'll give you a little more heads up. And I want to actually.
Yeah, you should come out for Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury.
I need some mentorship. I'm trying to get in the game.
I'm about to bring him with me,
you know, how I get connected in these things. So I would need to talk to you about that. I love to be there. Boxing has become a staple of the things that we talk about on Real Sports Guys. And a lot of
going on.
Our conversations with you. I mean, I think you've, as I told you, I grew up reading Ring Magazine. That was, you know, you had Sports Illustrated and you had Ring Magazine. And to be able to, you know, create a platform where I can bring that voice and that perspective to what we do, I think it is great. And so thank you for being here tonight and being part of this with myself and Darnell. I'm going to open up with, you know, I know you're not a person, and we talked about this before, you don't get into MMA. And so I'm not going to ask you about the recent fight that happened in terms of MMA, but I'm going to talk to you more about the aftermath.
Right. That I saw. See, I didn't see the fight, but I saw the melee.
The melee, because boxing's had a share of its melee.
Whatever that was. Different people call it different things.
Yes.
But it was some set tripping.
It's some set tripping, and and when you're in Vegas for a big fight, it's a whole different kind of. As I was saying, I was going out for a meeting, didn't even know a big fight was happening, and it happened to be Zab Judah and Floyd Mayweather. And I'm like, okay,
2006.
I'm gonna see if I can get a ticket.
Yeah,
and I somehow got a ticket, and I was sitting at the top, but it wasn't really a bad place in the house to watch that fight, and it was a fun fight to watch.
Yeah,
I felt like Zab Judah at times pushed Mayweather. It got feisty. And next thing I know, everything breaks loose.
Yeah.
And Vegas has that kind of tension and excitement. So I'm watching it. It's going crazy. I'm not realizing I'm watching a real important moment. And then, as we know, in the aftermath, you know, was it Roger Mayweather already had some existing issues with the law?
Yeah.
And this was something where he, you know, obviously broke his probationary agreement or whatever it was that caused him to have continued illegal problems. But, you know, this is a fight game. And sometimes the fight games, everybody around it sprinkles out into the crowd.
Right.
How do commissions handle these kind of things? What ends up happening in your opinion, what kind of thing do you perceive might happen in this situation? Not on the MMA, but just what you know about Vegas and the commission.
Oh, I think the commission's definitely going to hand out some fines. It's going to be a lot of money fined, maybe to both sides, but definitely to Team Khabib.
Yeah.
He's the one who lost his cool after the fight. I mean, he won the fight. He had everything, you know, to the victor go the spoils, but he stayed angry.
Yes.
You know, he bottled up all that anger for weeks, months maybe. And, I didn't see the fight, but from when I was told, you could tell he was pissed off even as he was giving Conor McGregor a beatdown.
Yeah.
Made Conor tap.
Yeah.
And he was still full of piss and vinegar. Yeah. And there were people, you know, chiding him and chastising him and taunting him outside of the cage. Yeah. And he'd had enough. And I don't even have a problem with that. You know, I can't have a double standard in boxing. Combat sports can't have a double standard because on the promotional side, and the side of the media. We like it when guys get into it. We like it when it's heated, you know, like it, we like grudge matches when it's, when the beef is real, when the hate is real, it adds some spice to the promotion and to the storylines. It makes it easy to write about it. And because they're combat athletes and they're fighting, it's like, well, sure, you're supposed to be pissed off when it's a fist fight. You don't want the participants to be too cool-headed.
That's right.
But so when things spill out of control, there's some leeway. I mean, you know, when folks push and shove or headbutt a little bit at a weigh-in, it's not like the commission doles out fines or anything like that, or the fight's in jeopardy because folks mix it up a little bit, you know, on stage, for the stage, for the promotion, in front of the fans and everything. But once the fight's over and it spills out into the arena, well, then there's that dangerous line you cross where are you inciting a riot? Mm-hmm. Yes, are you putting the civilians, the fans, in danger? And you do have to control that, and you can't just let it go. Mm-hmm. Because if it goes unchecked, sooner or later somebody will get hurt. And then you got lawsuits, and people will sue everybody. They'll sue the arena. They'll sue, you know, the commission. They'll sue, obviously, the promoters and the fighters or whatever. And I worry about it, you know, even when it's like you kind of can tell that the two fighters aren't really going to go at it. Like we had at the L.A. presser for Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury. They got up on stage. Tyson Fury talked that stuff. And Wilder kind of came at him. And I get the feeling that they're doing like a pro wrestling thing. It's a shtick, and I'm totally cool with it. And I understand where they're coming from. But there's all these other people on the stage, and sometimes they get worked up, and they're pushing. Both sides are pushing. And then you got folks who are up there in age, like in their 60s or 70s. And I think Shelley Finkel got knocked down or whatever. But he's no spring chicken. And he, you know, maybe he shouldn't have been on the stage. You know, maybe, you know, he knew what he was doing or what he was getting into. But, you know, there have been folks who've been hurting that kind of stuff before. Yeah. I think when Mike Tyson lost his cool at the press conference for his fight with Lennox Lewis, the president of the WBC, he passed away a couple years ago, Jose Suleiman. He got knocked off the stage and he broke his leg or he broke his foot or something. And he was in a wheelchair for a long time. And I remember a publicist for the Hispanic language publicist for Top Rank got knocked off a stage once during one of Top Rank's. I don't remember what fight it was or which fighters got into it, but something happened and he fell off and he was on crutches for months, you know, so people can get hurt.
Yeah.
And you know, if it goes unchecked, sooner or later, somebody's going to fall and, you know, hurt their head or their neck or something, you know, God forbid, you know, something really awful happens. So it can't go unchecked. And it, you know, it is a bad look. It's a bad look for the UFC. It's a bad look for MMA. It's a bad look. I don't even know what country Khabib comes from. I've been calling him a Russian or whatever, but he's not. He's from some other part of that world. I don't know.
Central,
Eastern Europe. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Derek, Darnell, do you know where Khabib is? But it don't.
Kazakhstan, but
you know, I think he's the first real standout worldwide, world class athlete from that part of the world. And now, you know, going forward, when other folks come out of that area, because I've heard people. You know, fans of Khabib say, well, you know, he was retaliating because of what Conor McGregor did in New York City, throwing the dolly at the bus. And I get that. But with McGregor's situation, it wasn't in, you know, it wasn't in the arena. You know what I mean? It was like backstage, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? Doesn't make it right. Two wrongs don't make it right. But
one of the things you're hitting on, I think, is really interesting. Is like there is some cross-cultural dynamics in this, in a sense that there is.
Well, that's what I keep hearing, folks say, hey, the part of the world he comes from, you don't mess around like that. And I'm like, that's probably true, but because of the way he acted out this one time, And from what I understand, he usually keeps his cool and he's usually respectful. Yeah. He's just a beast in the octagon, in the cage, you know, and once the bell rings. But then after the fight, he's respectful. But because he lost his cool in this situation, you know, for every 10 MMA fans that are going to give him a pass, there's 100 casual fans who that's the only thing they've ever seen of Khabib. And they're going to say, well, folks from that part of the world are thugs. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that's bad. That's not good. Yeah. You know, and that's not fair to people from that part of the world or athletes, combat sports athletes from that part of the world. So, but anyways, you know, you had asked me about what the commission's going to do.
Yeah.
And when I think of the, you know, Zab Judah comes to mind because there was, you know, he lost his cool in that fight with Mayweather. And Roger Mayweather got in the ring. Now, listen, if they were following the rules, actually, Judah would have won that fight by disqualification because Roger Mayweather entered the ring during the round. You know, time wasn't called or anything like that, you know. And that's supposed to be an automatic disqualification. But, you know, the referee, which was Richard Steele, he didn't make that call. And so there is leeway in these situations and all. But definitely Zab Judah was fined heavily by the Nevada Commission. He was suspended. And the same thing happened after he was stopped by Kostya Zou in 2001.
That's right.
He got really upset, and he went after the ref.
Yeah, I remember that one.
1080, and he put his glove in his neck, and then they cooled him down, and then he picked up a stool and threw it. It's like, okay, maybe you could have hit somebody. You're endangering folks, so – the commission, they fined him, you know, it was thousands, maybe tens of thousands. And I think he was suspended, which meant, you know, he couldn't fight in Nevada, you know, until he served that suspension. And then he had to go before the commission and say, hey, I'm sorry. I've got my act together. I'll never do it again. And they forgive. They do. With high-level, well-known athletes that definitely generate revenue, mm-hmm. for, you know, that region, whatever jurisdiction it is, but certainly mm-hmm. Las Vegas, certainly Nevada, you know, they're all about money.
Yeah.
They'll forgive you. You know, Mike Tyson, same thing after the ear bite fight, they fined him, I don't know, like maybe 10% of his purse, which was a lot of money. I mean, I think he was guaranteed $30 million for that second fight with Holyfield, maybe a little bit more. And then he was back. You know, I think they revoked his license, but after a year he could come back and ask for them to reinstate him. And they did. He came back 1 year later against Francois Botha. That was 20 years ago. That was actually one of the first major fights that I covered as a boxing writer.
Wow.
So, you know, even when you do like crazy stuff, you know, like mutilate a guy, you know, bite a guy's ear, not once, but twice, you can come back. So I think worst case scenario, if the Nevada Commission suspends Khabib, it won't be for more than a year.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be more for the year. Probably be like 6 months.
Yeah, and I think 6 months.
He doesn't have a track record that I know of. He doesn't have a track record. So I just think he's going to lose some money. That's what I think is going to happen, really. And then they're going to be like, okay, you're suspended for 3 to 6 months, which – today's athlete, that doesn't mean a whole lot. You know, today's combat sports athlete, the high level guys, they only fight a couple times a year anyway. So it's not that big of a deal.
Well, we'll get into boxing here. A fight that kind of just got lost a little bit. And I thought said a lot for at least that division was Porter and Danny Garcia. I mean, it was a fight that, you know, is really somebody in a way, elimination fight, you know,
yeah.
To get an access. And, you know, Danny Garcia is, you know, Philly fighter who has always been awkward. I've never really seen him as being very athletic, whatever, but he just knows how to fight and win. And
he's strong and he's pretty smart in there. He knows when to let his hands go. The technique's not perfect. Yeah. And, you know, I think his downfall, he doesn't let his hands go enough. He fights spots. He's kind of like a poor man's Canelo Alvarez.
He's
not a knockout puncher, but he's got heavy hands. You got to respect him. If he catches you right and you don't have a great chin, he'll knock you out, but he could take a good shot.
Yeah.
And he's really at his best when he stakes out the center of the ring.
Yeah.
And he's counter punching you. you know. Yeah. But, you know, there are limitations there. You can outmaneuver him, as I thought Lamont Peterson did,
yep,
stretches of that fight. You can out-jab him, you know, like I thought Mauricio Herrera did, mm-hmm, for much of their fight, you know, back when he was fighting at 140 pounds. Mm-hmm. And Keith Thurman did that. He did kind of a stick-and-move, hit-and-run sort of strategy,
yep,
against Garcia, and it worked. And Porter did a little bit of that, but Porter was also Porter. He was aggressive, and he was more active, and that was really the main difference. And I thought it could have been a draw. It could have been 7-5 for Garcia. I had it 7-5 for Porter.
Yeah.
Certainly over the second half, he just let his hands go more. And I agree, Garcia is a bit awkward because he, you know, his dad didn't come from a boxing background.
Yeah.
And the only trainer he's ever had was his dad.
That's right.
So when you have that father and son trainer, you know, father coached, talented son boxer, mm-hmm, that combination, and you had it all throughout the amateur career and the pro career, mm-hmm, then they basically develop their own style. That's what happens. Yeah. And sometimes if the talent is really there and the father is real creative, like you have with Joe Calzaghe and, mm-hmm, and his father, Enzo, yeah, Calzaghe, who just passed away recently,
yeah,
you get this, like, style that's very hard to beat, you know? Yeah. And even, you know, with Roy Jones Jr. and his father, that style, mm-hmm, that Roy had, that's what his father instilled, mm-hmm, when Roy was an amateur.
Yeah.
And it worked because Roy was a once-in-a-lifetime talent. And, yeah, he was smart boxing-wise. He understood, yeah, distance and timing. He just didn't do it by the book. And that worked for him, you know. But Danny Garcia doesn't have – he's not that at that level of talent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, or Shane Mosley and Jack Mosley. So Jack, yeah, Mosley wasn't a boxer. He didn't come from a boxing background.
Yeah.
But his son had – he was such a natural athlete, yeah, and strong-willed and had a great chin that, you know, their own – that power boxing is what they called it.
Yeah.
It worked for him for a very long time, you know. Danny Garcia, not at that level of an athlete of a Shane Mosley, certainly not a Roy Jones Jr. or a Joe Calzaghe, but I think that style he has worked for a long time, but he's been around long enough now. He's still young, but he's a veteran. People have figured, like, a world-class fighter knows how to beat him.
And, so do you see him as like a stepping stone fighter now, which is a dangerous?
Oh no, I would never call Danny Garcia a stepping stone fighter. No, he's dangerous. I mean,
can he beat the elite fighters? Can you? I mean, what you say? I mean, is he the person that's always going to win? But when he gets in that elite fight,
You're right. You know what? He's a top contender.
He
could be a belt holder again. Yep. But when you say elite fighter, okay, you're talking about Terrence Crawford.
Yes.
Like number one to number three.
I think that's what he's aspiring to be. Yeah.
You're talking about Errol Spence.
Yeah.
People have him in their pound for pound, right?
Right.
You ask me who wins, Danny Garcia or Errol Spence or Danny Garcia or Terrence Crawford, man, I'm going for Bud Crawford and the truth. I'm going for Errol Spence. But he's dang. I mean, for anybody else, if you're not elite, it's a hard night's work. Like, yeah. – Porter's not elite, but he's a legit top five or six contender.
Yeah.
Same thing with Keith Thurman. He's a legit top five contender.
Yeah.
And they beat him, but they just barely beat him.
One thing I saw that was interesting.
He's not a stepping stone. He's not, yeah, you know, you can't, yeah, be like some prospect. Oh, I'm gonna make my name,
yeah,
on by fighting Danny Garcia. You know, Garcia will ruin a prospect.
Where I saw Porter, though, I've seen Porter evolve. Meaning,
yeah,
in this fight, I saw more of him using his athleticism and boxing.
Than, yeah,
I thought his bullying and his bullying was controlled.
Yeah,
felt part of a game plan.
Well, don't forget, he was a standout amateur.
Yeah,
he was one of the best at a much heavier weight too.
Yeah,
it feels like he's 65 pounds.
It feels like he's putting it together.
Yeah.
You know, some people have those losses and they start to realize the formula. And
yeah.
It felt like that while watching that night, I was like, okay, I could see him now thinking through the game in a different way. And when he's
now, come to think of it, Sean Porter and Kenny Porter, that's another father, yeah, and son team, yeah, where the, yeah, father was not an established boxing guy.
Yes.
And they definitely developed their own style as a professional. Very, very rugged, very awkward, very physical. Mm-hmm. But Porter is also a smart guy. Mm-hmm. He's a student of the game, and he can box. He mixed in more of your standard traditional boxing mm-hmm. with Garcia because he respected Garcia. And, you know, he knew he couldn't come in reckless. Garcia can clip you and hurt you.
One of the things, and I was going to actually ask this a little bit later, but because you're talking about the importance of the trainer, you actually before the Canelo fight, you were up in Fresno watching a fight, and it was Jose Ramirez, who I hadn't really seen fight. I think he moved from wild card to start the fight with Garcia, and I hadn't really seen him fight, but I was impressed.
Yeah,
he's a great beast.
Yes, he is.
He gets after it. I mean, that's quite a camp they're developing over there. He's making some noise.
He's going to be hard to beat.
You were there at that fight, right?
No. I was in Vegas. I was tweeting a lot. I was watching in my hotel room in Vegas.
So I know I seen you up on Twitter as well.
I love. It was a great fight, and I'm really impressed with Jose Ramirez. You know, the guy he beat to win the WBC 140-pound title, Amir Imam, that guy's no joke.
Yes.
Amir Imam, on a good night, beats a lot of top 140-pounders, even 147-pounders. Mm-hmm. But Ramirez is going to be very difficult to beat because he could take a shot, mm-hmm. and he's a technical pressure fighter, mm-hmm. and he's a volume puncher.
Yes.
And it's like it's real hard to outbox him. Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't give you room to operate or the space to breathe. He sets such a fast tempo. He sets a fast pace. Yeah. And he's working, but he's thinking in there. He's not just like a dumb, you know, volume puncher. He's not just, oh, I'm going to outwork you.
He's
throwing more than you, but he's really thinking about his punch placement. And if he hurts you somewhere, he's going to go back there. Like, he's always looking for places, you know, how can I break you down? And when Orozco was being real defiant in the middle rounds and was trying to go to Ramirez's body, Ramirez started going to Orozco's body.
Yes.
And that really set up that knockdown that he scored in the middle of the fight. And he just stays on you. And if his chin holds out, because he's not a great athlete. He's not the slickest guy out there. Yeah. Not the most fluid boxer puncher out there. But He's got some snap on the end of his punches. He's got pretty good technique. He's got a good foundation. Technically speaking, he was an experienced amateur standout. He was a U.S. Olympian. He's got that experience. They got him. But what really sets him apart is that he'll work 3 minutes of every round. Yeah. But he's thinking. He's a thinking pressure fighter. Kind of like Leo Santa Cruz. Proved to be. I used to think Leo Santa Cruz just went in there and wasn't thinking and was going to just outwork everybody. And he proved against Carl Frampton in that rematch that, no, he could mix it up a little bit.
He can mix it up. Well, I want to hit the big fight a little bit before I turn over here to Darnell a little bit to talk about some feature fights. Obviously, we had Triple G and Canelo. I had it 115, 113, Canelo.
That's fair.
And I mean, I think there can be arguments a lot of different ways in that fight.
And there's a lot of arguments out there, which is unfortunate. I did the online pay-per-view broadcast. And so I'm watching it live, doing the call. I had it 6 rounds apiece after 12 rounds. I thought it was, they both did great things in there. You know, Canelo stood his ground and went to the body and landed hellacious power punches. He was very accurate with his shots and economical. And Triple G did his jab thing. He out-jabbed him. Couldn't back up Canelo, but didn't allow Canelo to back him up because he circled him.
Yeah.
And he was turning, and he was the more active guy. So he was the boxer in there, really, and Canelo was more of the puncher. So it was kind of a role reversal from the first fight to an extent. And they both got a lot of really good work done in there, and it kind of reminded me of that first fight between Mike McCallum and James Toney, where McCallum was the guy in his mid-30s.
That's right.
And he was technical, and he was the jab master in there, and James Toney was the young buck, and he was throwing bombs. and standing his ground. And and that fight was a draw.
Yep.
And it was disputed, you know, but because of the history and the bad blood between Golovkin and Canelo,
yep,
and all what had happened since the first fight in that 1 year, it's like people can't accept. Like, if you pick Golovkin to win that fight, or you like Golovkin, or you just don't like Canelo, you can't give him, at least the people on my Twitter timeline, the hardcore fans, they can't give him credit, and they're pissed off.
Yep.
And it's like, it's too bad because the bitterness, because it was a tremendous fight. Yep. I think it's one of the best middleweight distance fights since James Toney, Mike McCallum won. And that's saying a lot. Because that fight's a modern classic. So
that's my childhood friend right there, James Toney.
So
respect that. We got a lot of love for him in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So then they send Triple G into the gulag to fight Charlo. They're like, you're gonna have a tough road back.
I wonder if that happens. I don't know. I wonder if that fight happens.
You'll think it's gonna happen? I'm just like.
Well, I don't see how the WBC can mandate that fight when Triple G doesn't have a title. You know what I mean? Charlo's got the interim belt.
Yeah.
And does Triple G want to fight for the interim belt? And I don't know. It could. I mean, if the money is there, and one thing we're going to find out next year, you know, HBO's out of boxing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
So we have all these platforms that are actually really well-funded and that have made a commitment to boxing. Showtime re-upped with the PBC for 3 years. Al Haymon also did a 4-year deal with Fox Sports. And with that deal, they're paying licensing fees and there's marketing money with that. There's DAZN with Eddie Hearn and they're not exclusive to Eddie Hearn, but he's their main guy. He's kind of like their promoter face for their boxing content outside of the World Boxing Super Series. Reportedly they are committed for like 8 years.
Wow.
And huge licensing fees. Who am I leaving out? ESPN. Good grief. How can I? ESPN. Yeah. They just re-upped with Top Rank for like 7 years.
Yep.
And they have this ESPN Plus platform, which they recently announced has 1 million subscribers. So obviously there's money there. So when you have these sanctioning bodies mandating fights or going, you know, fights that go to purse bid or whatever, there's going to be a lot of money thrown at these fighters and these fights. So, you know, if you're ESPN, you want Gennady Golovkin to fight on your platform.
Yeah.
You put him on ESPN Plus because you know you're going to get a lot of subscribers. Same thing with DAZN.
Yeah.
You have a Canelo Alvarez or a Triple G fighting on your platform, automatically you're going to get thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of people signing up to watch this fight because these guys have diehard, dedicated fans. That's why nobody can agree on the score of that rematch, is because their fans are so diehard. It's like they can't be reasonable. You understand what I mean? So if there's enough money tossed at Golovkin Charlo to happen, the fight will happen. Mm. You know what I mean? But for the first time in like 8 years, Triple G does not have a world title. So he doesn't have any sanctioning body obligations.
Yeah.
For years, he had to fight some guy that the IBF wanted him to fight. He had to fight some guy the WBA wanted him to fight. He had to fight some guy the WBC wanted him to fight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he doesn't have that obligation. So he could literally say, okay, listen.
He could pull a Mayweather
right now. Whoever makes the biggest offer. What if this guy from Japan, Ryota Murata, if he wins his fight on the 20th, and the Japanese promoter says, we want you to fight, you know, in Tokyo, and I'll pay you $10 million. He's not going to say no to that.
No.
You know, he's going to be like, you know, sorry. He's going to say, sorry, WBC, but I'm going over here. Or maybe the winner of the Danny Jacobs, Sergey Derevyanchenko fight. Okay. Jacobs is with Eddie Hearn.
Yep.
The DAZN got a lot of money. It'll be like, okay, rematch Golovkin versus Danny Jacobs.
Mm.
And we'll overpay you to get you on DAZN because we're trying to build up a subscription base here.
Mm.
So, you know, Triple G has options. And they're all viable. It's like these guys he could fight. You know, he could fight Demetrius Andrade, you know what I mean, who's also with the Zone. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If the money's there and he fights one of these guys and they're a legit, you know, middleweight contender, it's all good. But having said that, I would love to see Golovkin Charlo because I love big fights in Texas. Charlo is a Houston native. Triple G has never fought in Texas. I know Texas would welcome him. Yep. He's got a lot of fans there. That fight's a natural for the Toyota Center. They would sell it out easily.
They could probably
charge a lot for those tickets. I hope they wouldn't, but they could put it in. Is it Candlestick Park?
Yep.
Is that where Canelo fought James Kirkland? I think it is. It's in Minute Maid Park.
Oh, down in
Houston. Yeah, it's Minute Maid, right? It's a baseball park. I think they could do it if they wanted to. They could do it in a stadium.
They could do it in Jerry's house. They'd fill it up in Jerry's.
Jerry would welcome it there. Jerry would welcome that.
So what happened to HBO? I mean, how did HBO fall off? My boy Max Kellerman,
ran out of money. They were the 800-pound gorilla because they wrote the biggest checks and nobody could compete with them. And 10 years ago, it was the boxing unit. You know, in America. The network universe for premium boxing was just two sides of a street. It was HBO or Showtime. HBO and Showtime were the subscription cable networks that outbid the networks, NBC, ABC, and CBS in the late 80s and early 90s. And by the mid-90s, boxing was off of network television and exclusively the domain of HBO and Showtime, mainly HBO because they had a huge budget. They had $100,000 an annual budget that sometimes exceeded $100 million. Mm. So nobody could compete with them, even when they didn't have the best leadership. I hear a lot of people blaming Peter Nelson. He ruined it because he doesn't know what he's doing. And it's like, you know what? Outside of Ludabella, when Ludabella left HBO like in 1999 or early 2000, he was the smartest. He was like a real boxing guy. He was like, as far as matchmaking and getting it and knowing how to cultivate talent, knowing what boxing fans wanted, there's nobody that comes close to him. Mm. But when Ludabella had that position, you know, his boss was Seth Abrams. And Seth Abrams was he's a guy who loved boxing. So the higher ups in the corporate ladder, they supported boxing. He had a budget to really work with. And the people, his successors also, I think a guy, his name was Kerry Davis. Mm-hmm. Kerry Davis doesn't know boxing more so than Peter Nelson, but mm-hmm. When Kerry Davis was in that role, his only competition was Showtime.
Yeah.
And Showtime had like a quarter of the budget. So who's going to win? Whoever has the most money in boxing is going to get those fights, you know. But the landscape has changed so quickly and so drastically now.
You and I talked about that with Al Haymon. Yeah, I told you, Al Haymon took it. You and I talked about what would be the impact.
Yeah, I hear Peter Nelson getting blamed for that, but it was his boss. It was Ken Hirschman. Yeah. That really made that decision. Like, we're not going to work with the Haymon fighters. And it wasn't really about – at that time, it wasn't about Al Haymon. Yeah. It was a Richard Schaefer Golden Boy thing.
Yeah.
Haymon had all that talent with Golden Boy, and Golden Boy was one of the main providers of boxing content programming for HBO. But Schaefer was working both sides of the street, and I just think Hirschman got sick of, you know, Schaefer saying, you know, pay us what we want or we'll just go to Showtime. And he finally said, screw you, go to Showtime. And they did that, you know what I'm saying? So, but really, I mean, in the last 10 to 15 years, the budget for HBO's boxing programming has diminished as the budget has risen for Showtime. So they went from being the 800-pound gorilla to the 400-pound gorilla. And then there's another 400-pound gorilla right across the street with Showtime. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was ESPN got involved. Once Top Rank left to ESPN, they got excellent. You know what? You're giving us world-class guys. It's not about Friday night fights anymore.
Yeah.
You're giving us pound-for-pound level talents like Terrence Crawford.
Yeah.
And Vasyl Lomachenko, and a household name in Manny Pacquiao. Yeah. You're going to bring in viewers. We're going to spend the money. We're going to support this program, and we're going to be committed to you. So now that's another 400-pound gorilla. You know what I mean? And now you got the zone. You got all these gorillas. If they can't be the 800-pound gorilla, if they can't be number one, they don't want to do it. Their whole brand is we're the best. We're simply the best. This is the home of championship boxing, yada, 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 pound for pound, all of that. And so if they couldn't have that, they just got out the game. And they no longer had the corporate support, you know, especially with this merger with AT&T. It was more about, let's not compete with Showtime to see who can put on the best fights. Let's compete with Netflix and see who puts on the best overall entertainment. And they're thinking about comedians and original programming and concerts and that kind of stuff. So.